From the National Weather Service, cloudy and mild, rain off and on again. Today's high 69. A little bit of a break in the rain right now. Humidity 90%, wind east at 13, 66 degrees Kenosha, 65 in Racine this morning. For W.
As keynote speaker for the two-day Lincoln Symposium. And now the excitement continues in a different vein as we preview for you what promises to be a very special homecoming concert Saturday evening, 7:30 p.m. at Carthage's Siebert Chapel. Quicentennial, that is the 150th anniversary of the Carthage Band. And so for this special occasion, there is an alumni band in which alums of the Carthage Band are invited to join in the festivities and fun and are coming back to the podium to help with conducting duties on Saturday evening of the Carthage Wind Orchestra. And then with us as well, Dr. Woodrow Hodges and Dr. Ken Winkle, who each had their own stints as director of the bands at Carthage. And each of them will be conducting a work on Saturday evening's concert. And it's going to be fun to do some reminiscing today about days gone by and about the rich and interesting history of band music at Carthage. And we should hasten to add that the Carthage Choir is also a part of Saturday evening's concert. Again, 7:30 p.m. in Siebert Chapel. The public is invited, free of you, to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg.
Glad to be here.
Good to have this reunion. Dr. Ripley, I want to make sure I get to ask this. One of the things that has impressed me about you for quite some time is that you seem to be something of a history buff. And I can't think of, really and truly, I can't think of anybody else on the music faculty who has such a kind of relentless, tireless interest in Carthage's history, including distant history. And you've programmed lots and lots of band concerts over the years that have touched on various matters out of Carthage's history. I'm just curious, is that always how you've been wired? Has that always been important to you?
I think a lot of it came from my background, especially at Luther College. There seemed to be such a history there. The band directors, the music department, the things about that place, and I felt, you know, quite akin to that, kind of very similar to the school that I remembered entering Decorah, Iowa, when I came 23 years ago. And so I just kind of came into the ideas, well, what's there? What could be that part of our history? And I found out some really interesting things along the way. So there's been developing programming ideas based upon finding out a little bit more and more as I went. And since that time, I've always had an interest just in the band's history in a larger sense, going all the way back to Renaissance music and things like that. But it's all blended together.
Yeah. It is a long history. And of course, I mean, as a Luther alum, I don't mind saying this, Carthage's history is in some ways even more interesting than Luther College's history, just because it's kind of a jagged history with these first decades that were down in Carthage, Illinois, and then this dramatic and in some ways traumatic move up here to Kenosha, Wisconsin. And of course, a lot of interesting things have happened along the way. So tell us a little bit about the very, very early days of the Carthage Band. I mean, and we're talking about 150 years ago.
So I'll try to keep this brief. There will be, for those of you that come to the concert, a program that includes, I think it's about a 4-page history that details a little bit more than what I'll do in these short moments that we have here. But largely following the Civil War, there were a contingent of men that were looking for a future within their own next steps as soldiers, and enrolled at Carthage as students. At that time, the college also had just hired on a German and music instructor by the name of Helfrich, and he was the cornet player that also led this first group of students. But that was largely the way that most college bands got started, was Civil War musicians that were looking either for a job or to continue in some way of playing. There were municipal bands, but also these college bands got started, and Carthage's was one of the first that took that leap. It seems like as both Ken and Woody and myself at times have done, is also involving community members within the group, a couple of years by community members, to form concerts as well.
And they were not all Carthage students.
Correct, correct. And that was fairly new information. I did a little digging into the Carthage Public Library in Illinois, and they did some research and found these newspaper articles that had this information. So this isn't included in any of the Carthage history books that have been published.
Much in the way of knowledge, tangible knowledge about what was played or what the very first concerts by something like the Carthage Band were like?
Outdoor programs, things were outdoors. But the first concert was actually held from the rooftop of one of the college buildings. The main building had been constructed from the top of that building as it was being constructed. Then, after that, most of the performances were for, like, oyster suppers or the Odd Fellows meetings. You know, they were things that were community events that needed to have a musical ensemble that would participate, and all of the reviews in the newspaper said that it was very favorable. There is one little quote that I'd like to read for some new instruments as they were getting started. So this dates from November 27th, 1873, and they wrote, "Not with a critic's eye, but pass its rusty old horns by. Spare your words, restrain your hoot, and help us buy new horns to toot."
So, probably not a poetry major.
No.
Wow. That's great.
So that's kind of how they got started. The thing that's interesting about the history in general of the band, but particularly now is situated within a small religious-based school, you know, that's just kind of getting started in this new location of Carthage, Illinois. And what they come to understand is this band that's been constructed to basically play for a commencement as well. You know, that's how a lot of music groups got their foothold into education. So they play for commencement, and they found out the group's pretty loud. And so actually in 1876, the first bigger. And so the faculty decides in 1867 that the band really shouldn't be playing anymore because the cymbals and the drums are just too loud
just
for
ear-splitting.
These yeah, for these kind of austere, you know, ceremonies that are taking place. So evidently, the band goes on hiatus for a while from that standpoint because of that. But
if there was a Carthage band straight through, I mean, if these 150 years have been an unbroken line, I mean, even in those years when they did not play for commencement, was there still some kind of Carthage band?
There have been instrumental groups almost continuously, but I don't have firm records to say in 1900 this was the group. Some of that is that the yearbooks don't all go back that far to be able to trace those things, and so the presumption is at that point they probably did stop for at least a few years. We know that once the 1920s actually come in after the First World War, then there's a rejuvenation of the college, and there's a reinstitution that's clearly seen in the yearbooks at that time. It says, and now here's the group going again. There's referencing at least three times to the start of an orchestra, that here is now the orchestra, and it's a combination of wind, brass, and percussion with strings. By the time we get to like 1947, there's a definite thing that appears in the yearbook that says, and that, but what I just recalled you asked that I would just give a quick answer now to is what was played within those first years, very much marches, waltzes, that was the norm at the time. And so there's a number of things along those lines. Our listeners won't know the titles anyway, so I won't go along with those for right now. But composers of the time was Claudio Grafula, who was a very prolific march composer from Germany, and other popular kinds of pieces.
So the concert that's going to happen Saturday night, you've clearly put it together with some eye towards this history. And I know from what you've already told me that a couple of pieces are very specifically programmed to commemorate this and other related anniversaries.
Yes. The whole year is really programmed to celebrate the anniversary. But for this particular concert, there's two pieces that really date from exactly at that time. The piece that that Ken Winkle is conducting, the Review March of Susa, and we're actually performing a work that was written for Carthage called the Carthage College Grand March, and that was written in 1874. So those two will be performed, but we also have our eyes turned towards the year 1873, which marks the anniversary of the birth of Sergei Rachmaninoff. So Dr. Hodges will be conducting a piece by him. And largely, this first concert, though, is more to kind of recenter the historical focus of the college and the music department at that time, which had very much the hymn tune by John Zdechlik. It's simply called Psalm 46. And then we end with A Mighty Fortress, because that's the closing music for the Carthage Grand March. And in between, we're doing a selection that was written by W.C. Handy, the St. Louis Blues March. And Handy was also born in 1873. So we're trying to just capture that year in a full way. The other pieces that are on the program, Alfred Reed's A Festival Prelude is representative of a composer that's been performed a lot at the college, maybe the most performed composer. The program, we end with a beautiful work by Rayfawn Williams that was written for the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II. This is, it's called the Old 100th Psalm Tune.
Oh, yes.
And it is this beautiful processional setting where we're also asking the audience to sing the first and last verses along with the band choir as we finish the concert.
That is magnificent work. It's one of my favorites, and that excites me a lot. I mean, everything you've described excites me a lot. For those of you just joining us, we're previewing Saturday night's homecoming concert and Dr. Woodrow Hodges, who are going to be guest conductors for Saturday night's concert. So just tell us a little bit about what it was like to receive the email or the phone call or however this invitation came to each of you to participate in this concert Saturday night. Dr. Hodges.
I got I got an email from Ken. Coming day, Saturday the 30th, what am I interested in conducting? And ironically, Saturday of homecoming is the only Saturday in the month of September and October that I'm in the town of Kenosha.
So they thread the needle with the invitation.
It worked out perfectly, and I was just really excited. I said, I'm in.
Wow. How about you, Dr. Winkle?
I'm not quite sure the circumstance such as Woody's here, but I'm delighted to be available for that. it's amazing that this march goes back to Sousa March before he was director of the Marine Band. He had been in a, they had a program for perhaps children of the people in the Marine Band, and then Sousa aged sort of a light early music, stage music feel, light and bouncy.
Absolutely. And you were saying it actually dates from this same year. Of the,
it is. There it was.
Wow. Fantastic. I'm excited to hear that. So, Dr. Ripley, tell us a little bit, and then we'll hear more from Dr. Hodges and Dr. Winkle. Tell us about the alumni who will be streaming back to Carthage to be participating this weekend. Tell us who was invited and who's coming.
Well, this is a wonderful collection of alumni from very, very many different years. And what initially kind of prompted the idea was that with the band going to Japan in January, we had looked at the possibility of having an alumni group that would go along with them because it's also the 20th anniversary from the first time that the band went to Japan. But that started some discussions about, well, maybe we should just have, you know, a big alumni band for this anniversary. And it all made sense. And so we started communicating back in, May, really, about ways to make this happen. I think the graduate that will be the most senior dates from the late 70s, so we don't go all the way back to 1873.
Not quite.
There are a number from the 2000s and the 2010s, but quite a representation also from the 80s. And so it's nice to see all of the various alums take part in this. The activities include the rehearsal in the morning. We have a dinner planned at night for them as well, and obviously the concert in the evening.
Fantastic. Isn't it always a little bit of a gamble? I mean, isn't it always possible that you end up with 55 flutes and one tuba? I mean, do you have to cross your fingers that a decent balance of instruments will appear?
Greg, that's the life of a band director. There's something about sopranos, altos, tenors, and basses that seem to always just kind of come in. But yeah, it's almost perfect instrumentation.
Wow.
As you allude, there may be a couple more flutes than what you would choose to have, but they're all delightful, are all good players, and it'll be great to have them there. But we have two oboes, we've got two bassoons, we've got a full range of clarinets, saxes, trumpets, and I mean, it's almost a perfect instrumentation.
Fantastic. Great. So again, we're talking about Saturday night's homecoming concert at Siebert Chapel that will feature the current Carthage Wind Orchestra and Carthage Choir and this sesquicentennial alumni band that will be rocking the house Saturday night. Can't look forward to that very, very much. Well, let's turn to our two special guests for a few minutes here and learn a little bit about their time at Carthage College. I guess we should start with Dr. Ken Winkle because he preceded Dr. Hodges to the faculty of Carthage by 3 or 4 years beginning in 1973. So this marks actually your 50th anniversary of when you started working at Carthage.
Wow.
Very good.
Amazing.
So tell us what your impressions were of Carthage when this opportunity came across your path. What was Carthage like in those days and its music department?
Well, Carthage was in a declining enrollment period. And each of my first, I think, 3, 4, 5 years, we got a little bit smaller. I think the faculty became a very cohesive unit because of that. Mm. We actually met and supported each other. And we had some very good students at that time. And it was a pleasure to see it gradually. It took quite a few years before that enrollment started to turn. And now I think we're down to about 700 students or so. Now the enrollment would be 2,500?
Oh, my gosh. I think we're closer to 2,900 okay. now. Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, that's about the freshman class that you're describing for the whole student body. But, you know, I think you're right that sometimes it is those lean times that are really challenging where actually sometimes it all blows apart. Yeah. But in other cases, especially if you have the right people, there is this sense of we're in this together, we have to work together. And it sounds like in Carthage's right. case, it was the latter.
Right.
So what were you teaching when you came to Carthage? What were your primary duties?
Well, I came as the assistant band director. I did that for 2 years. We weren't large enough to have two band directors. So I mainly was involved with restructuring the music ed program. They used to take a lesson on every different instrument. And I instituted the brass techniques course, woodwind techniques, percussion techniques, and so forth, string. And we'll still, that's the standard way of teaching the instruments. A band director has to be able to play all those instruments at some level. And also orchestration and at different points I taught freshman theory for several years. And
all the brass.
I played in the Croatian Symphony and trombone and dealt with all kinds of brass instruments. I also was involved with non-music courses. We had, I was on the curriculum committee when we approved for our basic writing skills and speaking skills and all those. We had four courses that all students were required to take. And I was quite committed to that program. And I taught in that long past what most of the other music faculty did.
Wow.
A lot of people did it a year or two and quickly got out of it.
put in their time. Yes. You were in there for the long haul. Good for you.
That's so I did believe in the premise of the program.
Sure. Oh, very good. Glad a jewel in your crown for that. Mm-hmm. Very good. So again, Dr. Ken Winkle begins on the faculty at Carthage back in 1973. It's 4 years later that Dr. Woodrow Hodges follows him. That's not the first time you were kind of in the vicinity to each other. Explain your connection with Dr. Winkle. Even
together, we were both graduate assistants with the band, and our wives knew each other and were friends.
His wife was from my hometown.
Ah.
Now, my first wife was from here in South Dakota, which is where Ken Winkle is from. And Ken Winkle's older brother, Bill Winkle, dated Carol's best friend in high school.
Oh, boy.
And so in Iowa City, we had an instant connection.
Sure.
And took classes together and were colleagues and then left it the same year. I went, in the same year, I went to Drew Bands.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Director of bands, pep band, and concert band. And then woodwind, all the woodwind lessons and music theory, which I hadn't done before, but I just needed to fill out. So I started doing music theory.
So that was a long enough list of things to do. And then at some point, it feels like music theory became more and more of a focus for you.
Well, I grew into it and ended up doing it the entire time of my career until I retired in 2013. It was theory 5 days a week. Yeah.
Very
cool. Well, 3 days a week. Oral skills, 2 days a week.
Something to do every single day, that's for sure. Absolutely. So you were also, I mean, Dr. Winkle mentioned how he was hired at a point when Carthage was having some struggles, and I know there was a renewal of struggles not long after that. I mean, that would have been, I guess, during the 80s where things became quite lean once again, and I suspect you maybe experienced what he did as well, I mean, where you're all in it together.
Well, absolutely, exactly. A declining enrollment, smaller and smaller instrumentation is always the fight, instrumentation. And James mentioned earlier sometimes community members sitting in, and so you don't necessarily like to do that, but we would have one or two people sit in on a certain instrument if we needed to.
Sure.
But by the mid-80s, we weren't doing that much anymore.
Right, right. And, of course, things turned around for the college quite dramatically, and that upswing is still very much in place. So you were both at Carthage during years of exciting growth, and I know for each of you, you probably have to remember memorable moments with great affection. Dr. Winkle, let's begin with you. What would be a kind of a musical high point that you remember from your time at Carthage?
The brass choir was the instrumental group for the Christmas programs. Mm. So that started very small on the stairway over by the old library. And they put chairs on the floor, maybe a couple hundred chairs.
And let me just clarify for our listeners. So this is now the Straz building.
Yes.
And if people are walking into Wartburg Auditorium, that big high-ceiling lobby area, that's where you're talking about the Christmas concert occurring.
Right. Band should be doing that. It's a bigger venue and so forth. So that at some point, I don't know the year, the band did the, you had the band and choir, organ, so some of those I thought were quite exciting. Maybe some of the tour things were very exciting also. Sometimes the brass choir toured with the band.
Very good. Dr. Hodges, what are a couple of musical high points you remember?
Well, my first high point was my very first appearance with the band on campus, Baptism of Fire. Hmm. Erno Dahl had come in the year 76, 77.
This was a former president.
His inauguration was in the fall of 77, right in the fall. I'd only been in campus a couple of weeks. Here's this big inaugural ceremony. People from around the country, you know, band in the, well, we'd only been nice in dresses. Well, what's the choir wearing? Well, they wear tuxes, and the conductor, John, went, well, he'd be in white tie and tails. Well, what does the band wear? Well, just nice suits, you know. And I said, so during the honeymoon period, we got tuxes, and our first time to play, we had just these ratty folding mixed stanzas, gray ones, some wire stands, some mixture of chairs.
Huh.
Well, so we got a bunch of new Manhasset stands. And so the first event was just right off the bat.
Yeah, no kidding. You remember what you played?
No.
Okay. You remember a lot of other things. That's perfectly fine. So Dr. Ripley, you started Carthage in 2001. Did you have a baptism of fire as well, or did you have a little easier entry?
I would also just relate now in a little different way. It's unusual to have two professors emeriti that would be a part of something like this, especially in the music profession. People, you know, tend to kind of go places, you know, so, you know, when you have such distinguished people with a record that are, you know, still a part of the community and doing the thing, I mean, that's just
right
a
here in
special
your backyard.
Thing.
Yeah.
And that was what I felt from the very outset, was that, you know, when I came for the interview and things like that, the numbers of the group at that point were sparse, you know. But both Ken and Woody, I can just call you guys Kenny now, you know, had done such a great job in recruiting and bringing new people in that first year was really very wonderful, you know. There was surprising number of students that were there and excited about playing. And, you know, since that time, there's been lots of other, you know, wonderful things. But the first year was really thanks to them that it went so well. Yeah.
Glad to hear it. For those of you just joining us, we are previewing this weekend's homecoming concert at Carthage College that will feature the Carthage Choir, the Wind Orchestra, and the Sesquicentennial Alumni Band that will be all joining forces for what promises to be a really exciting concert Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. at Carthage's Siebert Chapel. So, Dr. Winkle, tell us a little bit about growing up in Huron, South Dakota, and who or what got you excited in the trombone.
Well, I was not everybody thought I was a trombone player.
Yeah.
I was a euphonium player.
Oh, okay.
But I needed to, and I played through college, and then 3 years of Army bands, I could play trombone, and I subbed in the dance band in the service when they needed that. I decided, and then I taught 2 years, and then I studied euphonium with Bill Bell at Indiana University, and then we moved to West Branch, Iowa, and I decided I needed to be a trombone player. So I started summers, I took trombone lessons. I had to put my euphonium away. The reason I returned to my euphonium is Woody. He had me play a solo. He knew me as a euphonium player.
Yes.
He had me play a solo. And then I would split recitals. And finally I said, I'm really a euphonium player. Mm. It's a different animal than trombone. Same right. mouthpiece, same, you know.
No slide.
So...
Well, I'm glad to have that correction, because in my mind, you're a trombonist. So thank you for setting the record straight. So
And actually, with the pandemic in retirement, I played a couple hours every day. I decided I would drop the trombone, and I became fully a euphonium player. Did 2 recitals for the neighborhood, and I played in the Parkside Community Band with euphonium for a bunch of years now.
Fantastic. So, I'm so glad to hear that. So are you going to surprise us as well that you didn't start out on the bassoon? Did you start out on the flute or something else?
No, for sure. This is a real story. My whole entire family were brass players. And my paternal grandfather played baritone horn in the town band. And then my dad and my uncle grew up on baritone, not on euphonium, but an old-fashioned bell front baritone horn. And so that in the 1950s, that's what I started on. In fifth and sixth grade, I started on the family baritone horn. And when I started in junior high, I played baritone. And then we had a really good high school orchestra program, and I started on trombone, so you could play it in jazz band and orchestra. But I wasn't very good. I could read. I could count. I had great technique. I could read tenor clef, but I just didn't have a natural armature, a real snuffly sound, no endurance, no range. It was pathetic.
And I hope there's a happy ending to this.
I'm headed towards that. Okay. So then, and our high school orchestra and band director, Howard Hoggedall, was a bassoonist from Eastman, principal bassoon player in the Wichita Symphony, spent his summers conducting in Interlaken. And my dad was a college band director, taught woodwind techniques, brass techniques, and, well, maybe we should switch instruments. And bassoon, because I could read tenor clef, bass clef, was used to playing the continuum, you know. But he says, before you do that, you'll have to play clarinet first, because that's the piano of the woodwinds. Low octaves and F scale, you know, fingerings, and the upper registers, the C scale fingerings. So he brought home a woodwind techniques clarinet from the college where he taught. Showed me some stuff. Why, shoot, in 20 minutes and a half an hour, I could play the clarinet better than I just sound, you know. And I remember my mom and dad talking in the kitchen. My dad says, what have I done? What have we done? And so during my senior year in high school, I played trombone like everybody. And secretly, I started practicing on the clarinet. And when contest came, I played a Brahms clarinet sonata. And my director said, what? I got a 2, but I mean, you know. And so I graduated from high school and just started playing bassoon. And by the fall, I was a bassoon major.
Wow.
So... you know, in my senior year of college, I played lead alto sax in the Sinfonia Stage Band. I played, my cousin was a really good oboist, and during our Baroque Festival week, I played second oboe on a San Martini double oboe concerto. I played Tatian's, a flute novelty piece on band tour, and I played trombone and marching band and pep band, but then bassoon in orchestra and band. You know, jack of all trades, master.
There you go. And Dr. Ripley, you play the tuba.
I do. When I got started, my lovely elementary band director said, this little guy can play whatever he wants, but we want him to play tuba. And I just said, yes, ma'am.
All right. So, and you're married to a flutist, so you have both ends of the spectrum covered in the Ripley household.
Indeed.
Very good. I'm glad I asked the question because it was two good stories, three actually. So I think it would be important to and good to talk for just a few minutes. We don't have a lot of time, but talking a little bit about just the vocation of teaching. And of course, just because you love to play the bassoon or play the euphonium or conduct a band does not necessarily mean you have the heart of a teacher, but obviously everyone in this room does, and teaching has been really important to all of you. So, Dr. Wiggle, let's just begin with you again. I wish we had more time to talk about this, but was somebody a particular guiding light for you, or was there any particular principle that, in a sense, kind of guided you as a teacher, as an educator?
Actually, I had two unbelievable band directors. My elementary one had won the national marching concert band for the United States. I think there were 10, 12 banners in our gym. Mm. And we moved to Huron. Paul Christensen became my band director. He'd played alto sax in Sousa's band.
Wow.
So he's the one that probably had the most influence on me. In junior high and high school, Buddy and I would get passed to get out of study hall, and we'd practice every day. So he would kind of monitor us all the way through. And then after I became a band director, I would see him at the band director's convention. And that was just a wonderful meeting. He was a person who did not talk, but very quiet, but a wonderful player. And sometimes I would come from playing in pep band, and I would go to do a dance job, and he would point at me and says, stop playing those marches. This is the dance music, you know. You have to do the eighth notes differently.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, not all music
but
is
he was
Sousa march.
A great model. I did student teaching with him also. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're fortunate. Very good. Dr. Hodges?
I'll take a different tack. Teaching music, giving private music lessons is different than almost anything else. I got to fix this. This doesn't sound very good. But you're okay as a person. People come in and you just, you know, get beat up. Well, this maintains self-esteem and confidence, but still at the same time, you got to fix this. This needs to be better. It's never, it's always every lesson, what's the next step? It's never done. That was really good. Now, what about this? But you're okay as a person.
Well, I suppose that's important when you're trying to master an instrument like the bassoon. I mean, from what I understand, it is an exceptionally difficult instrument to master, and probably a lot of bassoon students have been beat up quite a lot by their teachers, I should think. So you probably learn from that own personal experience. Dr. Ripley, how about you as a teacher? What has drawn you to this profession and has kept you at it all these years?
You know, it really is just simply the love of music. I think the thing that I miss the most about teaching high school is there were times where I could see and feel the students turning from technicians to musicians. By the time they come to college, they've usually made that turn already. And it's just such a remarkable time. And so I think most of what I do in teaching teachers is to help them get to their students so that they can experience that part of things. It's just in, and they're not just playing notes anymore. They're not just kind of getting through it, that there's actually music going on. And that's what's driven me pretty much all the way through.
Fantastic. Well said. Let's finish out by reminding everybody about the incredibly special and exciting concert that is coming up on Saturday night.
So we start with the wonderful Carthage Choir and my great colleague Maggie Burke, who will be leading them in three selections. The first one is a spiritual Wade in the Water. Second piece is a reflective piece by Jake Runnestad that's been performed on campus before, but it's just a remarkable work. I'm ending with a new piece that I had not heard before, but of an Indonesian atmospheric piece with all sorts of special sounds and lyrical melodic things, and we're just so happy that that will be the start of the program. They'll be joining us again then at the end of the concert for the Vaughan Williams Old 100th Psalm tune, and in between we have the Wind Orchestra with their selections and the alumni band performing as well. 7:30 is the start time for the concert. We're looking at doors will open at 7 o'clock, maybe a little bit early. It'll be a busy day on campus, so at least the game will be done by that time. Parking should be available in the lower lot for that. And the next morning, we also have a worship service at 10, and then a memorial service for Pastor Carl Baylor at 11:15. And the Wind Orchestra is also playing for that memorial service. So we've got a busy weekend with the band, and starting with the concert is going to be great.
So 7:30 at Siebert Chapel, Carthage Choir, Wind Orchestra, and the Sesquicentennial Alumni Band as we welcome back a lot of old friends to the campus of Carthage College. Well, this has been fun today as well. I'm so glad that we had this opportunity to reconnect and to talk about the legacy that each of you have at Carthage College. Dr. Woodrow Hodges, Dr. Ken Winkle, and Dr. James Ripley, my thanks to all of you for being a part of the morning show today. Thank you again. And happy homecoming to one and all.
Thanks a lot.
And let's listen to the final measures of the magnificent work by Vaughan Williams, Old 100th Psalm, that will serve as the finale for Saturday night's homecoming concert at Carthage College. This is from an Argo compact disc, which features the Choir of Winchester Cathedral and the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, led by David Hill. Music of Vaughan Williams, Old 100th Psalm. Tomorrow on the morning show, I am excited to preview for you the opening of the next musical theater production at Carthage College, Carrie the Musical. My guest will be Matthew Hoagland, who coordinates musical theater at Carthage for the undergraduates, and he hopes to bring with him a couple of the members of the cast of Carrie the Musical. That will be tomorrow on the morning show. And on Friday, a look at the life and legacy of one of the legendary film directors, Vincent Minnelli, a life full of surprising twists.